This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. Governor Gretchen Whitmer is making her way through a stack of bills that were sent to her office before the legislature broke for the year. And this week, she signed a big package of environmental legislation. Here with me to break it all down is Bridge, Michigan's Janelle James. Janelle, welcome to Mishmash.
Hello. Thanks for having me again.
It's great to have you back, especially for such a really big topic that's going on right now. So the overarching mandate of these bills, soon to be laws, is that utilities must use 100% clean energy sources by 2040. How are utilities going to do this?
You know, I think that's a really good question for the utility companies. Honestly, the state's two largest utilities companies, DTE Energy and Consumers Energy, they already set out a goal to use renewable resources. DTE said that they would reach 100% renewable resources by 2050, and Consumers Energy said that they would by 2040. So I'm sure that within those companies, they already kind of have a plan in place. But the legislation that the governor just signed, there are benchmarks to that. So by 2027, the utilities companies have to get 15% of their energy from renewable resources. And that all includes wind, solar, manure, and landfill methane. And then that'll gradually increase to 60% by 2035. So those benchmarks hopefully will help the utility companies gradually meet that goal.
So there are some sort of checks in on the utilities and some ways of propelling them forward with all of this. Now, in 2020, Governor Whitmer pledged that Michigan would become carbon neutral by 2050, so 10 years after these particular utilities need to have their clean energy. Obviously, this bill or this package of legislation is working toward that. But what else is in both these bills and being done outside of these bills to meet that goal?
That's a really good question. So one thing that I want to make a note of is that 10-year gap. I would imagine, I didn't write the bill, so I can't say for sure, but I would imagine that 10-year gap gives the utility company some leeway if they don't meet the 2040 deadline. And that leeway comes from a provision, if you will. I don't want to call it a provision, but there's a part of the legislation that says the utility companies are struggling to meet the expectations. They may be granted good cause exemptions from the Michigan Public Service Commission for up to 2 years. So, you know, that 10-year gap may give the utility companies some time to meet that goal. Other things that may help Michigan reach that goal that are maybe inside of this package or maybe outside. One of the things I will say is that one of the bills in this package would.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent, but for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Shift authority to the Michigan Public Service Commission and allows the commissioners to prioritize new goals, including, you know, like service quality, affordability, cost effectiveness. And also another bill in a package will codify an already existing state rule to allow farmers to rent their land for solar arrays and you know, big projects like that, because that was a little bit controversial from, you know, learning during my reporting that Republicans, especially those in rural communities, again, and this is what I learned while reporting on this story, some in rural communities were concerned about the state being allowed to kind of dictate where large solar and wind projects will be put, especially in communities. Like some communities were concerned about the capacity or the noise or things like that. But farmers, on the other hand, they're like, hey, you know, I wouldn't mind renting some of my land for, you know, a few solar rays and things like that. So a little bit of controversy there. And that's something my colleague Kelly House reported on as well.
One of the goals of the bills that Governor Whitmer cited at the signing was that these would help people keep their power on during storms and floods. What is the connection there?
I think that society kind of transitioning from like coal and fuel and transitioning to more like electric power things and solar energy and all these like clean energy, renewable energy. I think that the idea is that it'll be a little bit more reliable so that in the event there is a storm, because when storms happen, the utilities company said, you know, mainly the main reason why people power, there's so many outages is because when you have these storms, which they also say are happening more frequently due to global warming, that you have branches that fall on power lines and then people, their lines are down.
Well, you mentioned a little bit about this, but I want you to tell us a little bit more about what opponents are saying about these bills.
So I did say that some of the issues that opponents are saying is that concerns from residents of rural communities. Another concern was the timeline and, on the other hand, the unreliability of clean and renewable energy. So opposers of the legislation is saying, you know, we don't know too much about this technology and we think the 2040 deadline is too soon. I wasn't given like the perfect number, if you will, or the perfect year of, you know, when to reach this goal, but opposers were saying 2040 is too soon. Others were saying, you know, in order for this to really work, Michigan would have to come an extremely sunny and windy state, which it's not traditionally. So those were some of the other concerns that I heard from opposers, which was ironic because while some said the timeline was too soon, others criticized the legislation, especially environmental groups, criticized the legislation for making the deadline 2040 instead of 2035.
Can't please everyone. I want to shift gears to a piece you wrote last week about Holton Township, which is in Muskegon County. Uh-huh. The township voted to declare itself a, quote, Second Amendment sanctuary. Let's start with, because there's a lot to unpack here, what is a Second Amendment sanctuary?
So these Second Amendment sanctuaries are just localities that pop up, not even just in Michigan, but across the country, that pretty much say that we're not going to necessarily follow state laws or laws related to infringing upon the rights that people have granted by the Second Amendment of the Constitution. So a lot of these communities are places where they support guns and they want people to be able to own their guns. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Right. So they voted to say that we're Second Amendment sanctuary and we are not going to follow or enforce laws that we feel violate our Second Amendment rights. But they also had a resolution to create a militia. And you mentioned in your piece that this town has about 2,500 residents. What is this militia and what details can you tell us about this?
So the militia is part of the resolution that was passed to make the township a Second Amendment sanctuary. If you are a legal primary resident of the township and you are at least 18 years old, you're allowed to join this militia. Now, in the resolution does say that this doesn't mean that you can take matters into your own hands. And I'm paraphrasing here, but you can't take matters into your own hands or act any way above the law. But, you know, anyone can join the militia as long as they fit that criteria.
And what does the militia do?
I'm not entirely sure what the militia does, because since I reported on this story, I haven't followed up and asked if anyone has joined it yet. When I wrote the story, it was very shortly after they had passed the resolution. So at that point, to my knowledge, no one had joined as of yet. So I'm not entirely sure what the what the purpose of the militia is. But I do want to point out something interesting, is that they tried to pass a similar resolution a few years ago. Yeah, they tried to pass one. It didn't pass. This time it did, but the last resolution, it didn't have a militia in there. This time it did. And I found that to be very interesting.
Why do you think, that part of it aside, why do you think that the resolution passed this year as opposed to last year? Is there anything that's changed, or like, why is this happening now?
So when I spoke to the township supervisor, he did tell me that one of the members of the board was not in support of it the last time, so it didn't pass. But that member stepped down and was replaced. And the person that they were replaced by was supportive of it. So that is why it passed this time, according to the township supervisor.
How enforceable are these policies? I mean, how much teeth do these resolutions really have? I mean, they're basically saying that they will not acknowledge any new laws that are associated with, for example, red flag laws or regulations that prohibit open or concealed carry. And there are new red flag laws involving perpetrators of domestic violence that were just passed. I mean, is this more of a grandstanding kind of a thing, or do these resolutions have some amount of weight to them?
When I spoke to the executive director of End Gun Violence Michigan, Ryan Bates, he did use those exact words. This is all political grandstanding, and that these resolutions don't really hold any weight. So they're not more so a law. It's just the resolution. I think the township is pretty much stating, this is how we feel. And it's more of a statement. And the township supervisor did say something along those lines, like, you know, this is a state law. Like, the red flag laws, they are state laws. And the purpose of us passing this resolution was to let lawmakers know in Lansing, hey, you can't just pass these laws without taking into consideration people that live in rural communities or people that don't necessarily live inside very populated cities where you may see more, you know, gun violence, or you may see more crimes involving guns or firearms. Like, rural communities have a voice too, and our voices deserve to be heard. Those are some of the sentiments that the township supervisor said to me when I spoke to him, and that was the inspiration behind passing the resolution.
Janelle James is a reporter for Bridge, Michigan. Janelle, it was a pleasure to have you back with us on Mishmash.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and Hearn Zagare Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim and Sophia Josniak. As always, if you listen to this show and want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you really, really like this show, you can support WDET. Just go to WDET.org/give. Without your support, really, shows like this one and all of the great work that WDET does just would not be possible. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.